Please help me in welcoming our main speaker, Danny G from Port Hueneme.
You said it just right.
Hello, everybody. My name is Danny. I am an alcoholic. Recovered from my seemingly hopeless state of mind and body through the steps and principles outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank you all for having me. Thank Lee, my friend Lee, for inviting me up. God, Mary, it's so good to see you. Where'd you go? You're back there somewhere. Alcoholics Anonymous has been very, very good to me. And I understand, I want to make sure that the new people understand that anything that I share today is my understanding from my experience. It doesn't need to be your understanding. I'm just here to share my understanding, my experience, my strength, my hope, in hopes that you do what the book suggests, that you identify with me, and you end with this sentence, I want what that man has, right? And my sobriety date is July 10th, 1983. That means back in July, I celebrated 42 years of sobriety. This is not my first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous on that day. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in January 1982 at the ripe old age of 17. And I stayed sober for 13 months. And I convinced myself that it was adolescence. And as long as I didn't deal speed, it'd be okay. And I left Alcoholics Anonymous never to come back. And I came back 5 months later out of a six-day blackout. That was my last drink. I came to on a beach where if I wasn't going to go to our local convention tomorrow, I would be at a meeting on that beach tomorrow morning where I came out of my last blackout. That's what I do every Sunday morning when I'm home. And I thank God every time. And I thank AA for God and God for AA. And I want you to know that I believe that there is one problem, one single problem for everyone, and that is a separation from God. And I believe that there is one solution, and that is to get closer to God. And that the steps are uniquely and divinely written to help us remove the things in us that separate us from God. I want to thank our 10-minute speaker. You did a great job. And I want you to know, I do this a lot, and the greatest sound I've ever heard is the sound of my own voice, and I'm nervous as hell tonight. So that just never goes away. So when I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been sober for 13 months. I started drinking when I was 12. My mother kicked me out when I was 14 because I'm violent. I lived on the streets of my hometown for 3 years before my father found me living in a burned out Pinto behind the Bob's Big Boy where I was cooking at. And I brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's how I got here. That's the short answer. I left, like I said, and I drank for 5 months. And I got to tell you, after years of being in Alcoholics Anonymous, I believe that I was not convinced that I was an alcoholic when I was here that first 13 months. I was not drinking. You guys were nice to me and you let me stay. So, I did what you did and I didn't drink. And I said, my name is Danny and I'm an alcoholic. But was I convinced? I don't know. But when I came back after drinking for 5 months, after doing exactly what the big book told me to do, the big book tells you to go try some controlled drinking. And it ends with, it might be worth a good case of the jitters to have full knowledge of your condition. Try it more than once, it says. So that's what I did. I left Alcoholics Anonymous and I went and drank. And in that 5 months, I removed every doubt from my mind that I suffered from the disease that the doctor describes in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That I proved to myself when I took that drink that I didn't know when I would stop. If I took a drink, I couldn't tell you when I was going to stop. It's just the way I'm built. It's just what it is. I have no idea if I'm going to stop that evening or if I'm going to come to out of a six-day blackout You know, and that's going to be the end. That's going to be the last day, right? I don't know. And I also don't know when I'm going to start. Because it wasn't my plan. That day wasn't my plan to start drinking. We were just hanging out. I had joined the JCs in Ventura to give back to my community. And those guys were drinking beer. And it's that old saying, right? You hang out at a barbershop, you're going to get your hair cut. You hang out with guys drinking beer, you're going to drink beer if you're me. Right? And that's what I did. And so I come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm at this point in time, I am 18 years old. I am walking back in the doors. And I got to tell you, when I was here the first year, I was a taker. So in 1982, in Ventura County, there was no young people in Alcoholics Anonymous. There was no young people. I went to the meetings and I said, my God, these people are old. They're like 30. And I thought, if I was that old, I'd quit drinking too. And I was an anomaly. I was not your normal guy walking in the doors, right? And so, and as I walked in the doors, I ended up with four or five new aunts, a couple of new grandmas, several new uncles, and everybody wanted to love me until I could learn to love myself. And that is just someplace I call ripe pickings. And I took advantage of that for quite some time. And I used up my welcome. And I am not an honest guy in that period of time. And I'm stealing from you. And I'm eating, I'm taking from you everything I can. And as soon as you're tired of me, you let me sleep on your couch, because I had no place. I was homeless when I got here, and I had no place to live. So you let me live on your couch, and I'm sleeping on your couch, and I'm eating your food, and I'm taking whatever I can until you're tired of me, and then I move to the next person, and I do the same thing. And so then I drink, and I come back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't have that. And I always talk about my very first meeting I came back to. First meeting I went to, so I came to out of that blackout. It was on July 10th. I'd started drinking on July 4th. That's the last thing I remember, cracking a bottle of scotch at night on the July 4th. And I come out of the blackout. I walk about a mile down the beach to my best friend's house, and he takes me to a noon meeting at the Navy base there in Port Hueneme, right close to where I live now. And I walk into the noon meeting, and there's everybody. I mean, everybody I remember. My father was there. There was several people there that that have since passed away, a couple that are still here. And you know, when I first came, the first meeting I ever went to when I was 17, it happened to be a closed meeting. If you don't know the difference between an open and closed meeting, closed meetings are for alcoholics only. But at that moment in time, I was not an alcoholic. My father found me in the burned out car. It took me to show me what he was doing. He was sober for like 3 weeks at the time. And we went in and he asked the group if I could stay. And there was a guy in the back of the room that stood up, and his name was Norm. And he stood up and he said, if you make him leave, I'm leaving. And he too was new like my dad. And so they let me stay. And nobody wanted me around then. So when I come back, Norm's at that meeting, my dad's there, my dad sees me, I'm homeless, I got no place to go, so he starts going around and asking people, and Norm had become one of those guys that lets newcomers sleep on their couch. And my dad took me to Norm, asked Norm if I could stay there, and Norm looked at my dad, he wouldn't even talk to me, I'm standing there, it's like he not even recognizing or acknowledging me. And he says, no, we're tired of him around here. It was a little worse than that, but I'm going to be sure to keep it as G-rated as I can. And that's the welcome I got. And went to another man named Al. And Al was the long-timer at that meeting. He has been, in 1983, he was sober somewhere in somewhere in the 20 years sobriety. I mean, he got sober sometime in the early 60s. And Al looked at me and he said, boy, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. And you don't know about Alcoholics Anonymous. If you keep your mouth shut, you have a 50-50 chance. Now, I know in this day and age, that might chase some people out the door, but 50% chance
was a good chance in my book, so it didn't chase me out. And then there was who became my first sponsor, and that was Choice. And Choice was big and decorated, chief warrant officer in the Navy, walked in the door, and his ego kind of pushed everybody out of the way, you know. He's just that guy, just loud. And I told him years later, I said, you were the only thing louder than what was going on in my head. And that Choice became my first sponsor, and Choice taught me how to pray. So I ended up not having a place to live because nobody would let me, because I was a taker in Alcoholics Anonymous and nobody wanted me. And if I walked in the doors of, if I walked into this meeting and I sat in the front row, I would never sit in the front row back then, but if I had a sat in the front row and a lady was sitting next to me, she would take her purse and move away from me to the other side so I couldn't reach it, because that's who I was when I walked in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I walked in the doors, if I got here early and people started showing up and there was a new young lady that was kind of attractive, girls would surround that girl and shuttle her away and tell her about me, because I was that guy in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And that's who I was. And so I wasn't welcome. I was allowed to come to the meetings. I was allowed to hang out, but I was not welcome to hang out with you. I wasn't welcome in your house. I wasn't invited to lunch. I went to lunch, but I wasn't invited to lunch. And so that's what walked in the doors, right? But the difference was, when I walked in the doors, is that I was convinced that I was an alcoholic. I had proven it to myself. I had read the book. I had read things in Alcoholics Anonymous when I was here that first year. And I looked at my experience, and I knew that when I took that first drink, I could not tell you when I was going to stop. But more importantly, I knew that I was insane, thinking, as long as I don't deal speed, it'd be okay. I just want to go to happy hour like those guys that drink normal. And that's insanity. That's just nuts. And so... And I've never been at that point in time, I wasn't a doer. I was just an attendee. I wouldn't come early and set up. I wasn't going to be the guy doing the greeting. I just came here, and I used to sit in the back of the room so I could see who was with who, so I could do that 13-step thing that I just love to do, you know. And in about 30 days, so I ended up sleeping in my best friend's garden house for about 30 days, and then we got a room, we rented a room and a house, and it was just crazy for that first year, just crazy. Just going to meetings and not drinking. Just going to meetings and not drinking will drive you to drink every damn time. And I was really close, but I managed to get my cake, and now all my... When I got that first year, I'd stayed sober for 13 months. I got that first year, right, when I was here before. And my mother, who had kicked me out when I was 14, changed the locks in the house so I wouldn't be able to get back in. You know, all that, right? Because I'm a violent drunk. I kick doors in. I do all that stuff, right? And so I'm getting my first year, and no, she's not going to come. No. I'd been there, done that. They had come to that first anniversary that I took that first cake, and my mother and my sister and my younger sister had all showed up, and then I drank. So no, they weren't going to be there. And you know, at about 30 days sober, I started fishing for a living, and I started working on boats, and I did that for a really long time, and still do, and. So I would leave. I got a job on a boat. I'm living on the boat. And I would leave, and I'd be gone for a couple of weeks, and I'd come home, and it was like I got a lot of attention. And for that, for a guy like me, if you can hear what I was like, that was good. I loved attention. And I'd come home, and then, you know, people would be like, where you been? You're still sober. You know, really happy to see me. And And I was praying. Choice taught me to pray in my very first weeks of sobriety. Choice was Choice's mother raised him to be a Baptist minister, and he loved to preach in the meetings. And he asked me if I believed in God. And I said no. I didn't say no. I said, I have no knowledge. My family wasn't a church-going group, and so I had not been to church. I didn't have any knowledge of church. I didn't know or not know God. I just was godless. And Choice shared his God in this way. He said, why don't you pray to my God, because he's not busy. And he taught me to pray that day. And he told me that you just need to say two prayers, one in the morning, one at night. And you're going to pray them. You're going to say them like this. He said, because God does not need from you a dissertation on what you think you need help with. God just needs to know you need help. So I want you to get up in the morning and simply say, help. And then at the end of the day, he said, God does not need to know what you think you're grateful for. God just needs to know that you know you are grateful. So at night, I want you just to say, thank you. I didn't do it just like that. I actually added, dear Choices God, help. And at night, I would say, dear Choices God, thank you. So now I'm fishing, I'm staying sober, and like I hear in Alcoholics Anonymous, so I'm 18 years old, so I'm fairly healthy, and I stop drinking, so all of that problem goes away, and I start working, and so things are better, right? I'm not living outdoors, I'm not homeless, so things are better, and I'm fishing, and when I was two, so this is 1985, July 10th, 1985, my birthday, I am fishing on a boat, actually here out of Morro Bay, fishing for albacore tuna. We're offshore 150 miles something. And I remember waking up, because I love my birthday. I love to celebrate my birthday. It is an absolute miracle that I am not drinking. So I want to celebrate that. And I woke up that day, I remember it. And on that day, I said, dear God. And I had taken the Choices word out of it. And I remember that. And so I had, as my friend, a good friend of mine says, I had come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had come to an Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had come to believe in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I said, dear God, help that day. And I came home from that season, and I had a new little fire under me, and I searched out another man to help me go through the steps. And his name was Buzz, and he had been sober for about 14 years at the time. And he said, yes. And he said, come tomorrow, we're going to be at my house, and we'll go through the third step. And so that's what we did. I showed up. There was another newcomer. We got down on our knees. We said the third step prayer. And he sent me off, gave me a little bit of direction, sent me off to do my inventory. And I was in the midst of that. Just like every other newcomer that I've ever seen in Alcoholics Anonymous, I am writing the great American novel about what you did to me. And I always share this. My new higher power walked in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. She had 30 days. By the time she had 6 months, we were married. We had this little house on the beach. AA boy meets AA girl on the AA campus. Little white picket fence, skipping down the road of happy destiny. And that process went in my back pocket. And I was once again just going to meetings and not drinking. Now for me, that's absolutely the worst place, the worst place I can be. Just going to meetings and not drinking, like I said, will get me drunk every time. And but first thing that happens is, like I told you, I'm a violent drunk, and I find that when I'm sober and have no solution, the same rage and violence comes back in my life. And while I never hit my wife, I broke every coffee cup. I put holes in the walls as close to her as I could. I was as rageful and angry and violent as I could possibly be. And I was, and we We were married for 4 years and separated for 3 before we were divorced. And at 5 years sober, I picked a Christmas tree up and I threw it through the front window of my house. And I became instantly aware that I was not living the spiritual way of life that's described in the Big Book of Alcoholics. When I was 7 years sober, we separated. And we were in the midst of a unbelievably contentious. Now, we had no kids. We had no money. We had no house. We had nothing. We just loved to fight. And so I did the only thing I knew what to do. I ran away. And I went to Alaska to work, to fish in Alaska. And paid a lawyer to take care of that. I'm going through this really fast, but in that period of time, I want to tell you that I had the worst sponsor that anyone in Alcoholics Anonymous has ever had. That guy didn't know anything. He drove me nuts. I went to Alaska, and he and I tried to do the steps alone up there, and it was not possible. I bought a new book. I found out that so I was in Sitka, Alaska, and when I got to Sitka, Alaska, I had gotten the national directory, and there is one meet at that time. There was one meeting every day in Sitka, Alaska at noon with the two people that lived in Sitka, Alaska. And I tell you what, when I showed up, they were happy I was there. So they didn't have to listen to them, you know, their stories over and over again. So I had the worst sponsor because I was sponsoring myself. And I had nothing to share with the man I was trying to sponsor. And I'm going nuts. I am crazy, and I am just about to drink. And I come home. I come home in August of 1992. In July of 92, I celebrated 9 years of sobriety. In August of 92, I had never done the steps. I was praying on an everyday basis, exactly how I pray today. I wake up in the morning and I ask for help. And when I go to bed tonight, I will say thank you. I've never felt that I needed longer prayers than that. That's what I pray. But I had never done the steps in 9 years. And I always tell people I was so dry, I was about to spontaneously combust, right? And I sat down at a speaker meeting. They started in my hometown without my permission when I was gone. I sat in the front row for some reason, and this man was the 10-minute speaker, right? And he said that he was sober. He got sober on December 8th, 1968, and on that week, that day he was 23 years sober, and he had gotten sober when he was 19 years old. And I didn't remember ever meeting anybody like that, and I knew I wanted to be him. I wanted to accomplish that, and I didn't think I'd be able to make it 23 more hours, right? So I found him washing coffee cups after the meeting in the kitchen, and I asked him to be my sponsor, and his name was Ray, and he was by far the most influential man in my life. And he was my sponsor for the next 14 years, and he taught me everything. I can read a book. I sat down and read Jurassic Park in one day. I can read the words on a page. But what I found out is I have absolutely zero ability to retain what I read, right? Meaning that if I'm reading the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and I reach page 30, and then I go over to 31, I reach 31, I turn the page to 32, I have forgotten everything I've read on page 30. I cannot read the book, right? And when I met Ray, I always tell the story, he gave me his phone number, and he gave me a list of meetings he was going to. I always found it strange that he did not ask for my phone number. Nor did he seem to care what meetings I was going to. He said, you asked me. That's what he used to say. You ask me, right? And at the top of that list was a meeting that was held out at the Camarillo State Hospital called What Does the Big Book Say? And that was a study meeting. It's a study meeting like I've never seen before. It's the only one that I've ever seen like it. It's a subject study of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is exactly what I needed when I was there at that moment in time. Subject study is basically you show up, you get a subject, you're asked to go home and read the entire book in the week and figure out what the founder said about that subject. Now, I had met another man that was a good friend of mine the week prior at a speaker meeting, and he had asked me a very simple question. Just my friend Mike, he said, Danny, what's the problem for an alcoholic? And I said, selfishness and self-centeredness. This we think is the root of our troubles. He said, God, that is a beautiful quote, but that's not what I asked you. He said, I asked you what the problem is. Go home, read the book, come back, tell me what the problem is. So I went home, I read the book. I didn't have the answer at that time, but I know what the answer is now. If you read the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and you look at the occurrences of the word problem, singular, not problems, not troubles, but problem, almost every one of them, all but two, are talking about drinking. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous thinks that the problem for alcoholics is drinking. That was news to me at that moment in time because I thought it was my thinking, right? So I'm like, So when I show up at this meeting on this Monday night, this What Does the Big Book Say? There's my new sponsor, and there's my friend Mike, who happened to be my new sponsor's sponsor. And then there was my friend Don that sat with him that was sober for eons at the time, like 15 years. And I placed myself in between those three men for the next year. I committed to getting to that meeting every Monday night. And I got to tell you, fishing for a living, that's next to impossible. That is next to impossible to say. I never had a meeting commitment while I was fishing, except for this commitment here. Because I can't tell you when I'm going to be out working. I can't tell you when the weather's going to be good. I can't tell you when it's not going to be good. I just can't, right? So I always worked in, my commitments had always been in conventions. But I did it that year. And in that process, so sitting with Ray, and Ray teaching me how to read, how to study, and going to that meeting and working really hard to learn what the founders meant in Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the first subjects in that meeting is promises. Question is, how many promises are there in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous? Some people will tell you there's 12 because we read them in the meeting. 12 promises, right? Some people will take some of the promises from the steps and tell you there's 20, 25. I currently have a list of 246 promises in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you take a promise. And one of my favorites, one of my absolute favorite promises in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is the title to chapter 2. Know what it is? There is a solution. There was no solution in my life. None. And this book is promising me that there is a solution. Right? So, I started going to that meeting, and I'll tell you, I made it every Monday night, but sometimes I made it at 2 minutes to nine, right? I made it at 2 minutes to nine to get my next subject, right? I'd get done, I'd get home, I'd unload the boat, or I'd have somebody else unload the boat, because by that time I had my own. I'd be racing through the bean fields out in Wainimi to get to the Camarillo State Hospital, so I'd be able to get there to figure out what the subject for the next week is. And I'd go and I would read that book every week. I read the entire book. I'll tell you how I do that. As people go, nah, it's not possible. You can't read the book in a week. There are 11 chapters in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you add the 12, the doctor's opinion, that's 12. If you read a chapter in the morning and then a chapter at night, you will read the book every 6 days. That is how I do it. That's how I still do it. When I do this study, that's exactly how I do it. I read a chapter in the morning, and I read a chapter at night. I used to think that I knew everything that was in that book, but I still have to read it every damn day. I must not know what it is, what it says, right? So,
So in that process for that year and since then, I have learned a lot of stuff about and formed a lot of understanding that, like I said, are my understanding from my experience. I used to think that alcoholism was a drinking problem. Alcoholism, according to the big book, the way I understand it, the way I've studied it, is not a drinking problem. Alcoholics Anonymous has no issue with drinking. Alcoholics Anonymous believes that alcoholism is an inability to stop drinking problem. That if I start, I can't tell you when I'm going to stop. I have an allergy. If I take alcohol into my system, I believe even today, after 42 years, if I was to drink, it was going to set off this allergy, which is going to manifest itself in a phenomenon of craving, and I cannot stop, right? And it is an insanity that when I came up with the idea to leave Alcoholics Anonymous, that if I just didn't deal speed, it'd be okay. Somebody should have locked me up right then and there, right? A lot of people walk in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, they look at that second step, and they take that restored to sanity to be talking about the crazy things we do when we're drinking, and it is not. And it is not talking about good mental health either. Look around. It is talking about one thing and one thing only in my understanding and in my study. It is talking about the thought that precedes the first drink, right? And that means that's a sober thought. That I am insane when I'm sober before I drink. And that's the only thing I have a chance to fight against. I have no control over the fact that I'm allergic. The only answer, according to the doctor, is complete abstinence. Don't drink. Allergy doesn't happen. As my friend Mike used to say, my allergy is inconsequential. It means nothing as long as I don't drink. But if all I'm doing is thinking about drinking, how am I not going to drink? Right? I used to think that Alcoholics Anonymous was a self-help place, that you guys were here to help me stay sober. I don't believe that. I used to think that you come to Alcoholics Anonymous to get sober. I don't believe that. In my observation over all these decades, I have yet to see somebody come to get sobriety and have it work. I remember I was going to this meeting in our hometown. It's called the 530 Happy Hour Group. I went to Mike. I'm not going to that meeting no more. That is not an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. They are talking about, I'll call that an anything anonymous meeting. They don't talk about alcoholism. They're just talking about anything. I'm not getting what I think I should get when I go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. He looked at me and he said, Danny, if you're going to get, you will never receive. If you are going to get in Alcoholics Anonymous, you will never receive. He told me that I must go to every meeting from that moment until this. Every meeting I go to, I must be going to add to give. I told you I was a taker in Alcoholics Anonymous. All I did was take, right? All I wanted was you to fix me, right? And that's just not the way Alcoholics Anonymous works. Alcoholics Anonymous works over everything else. One alcoholic helping another alcoholic. It's not even sharing. It's not even talking. It is helping. One alcoholic helping another alcoholic. That is the key. That is the secret sauce. And if you're sober for whatever length of time, and if you've done any semblance of the steps, and you're not working with somebody else, you are missing the secret sauce. You are missing out on the best part of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that is sharing with another person, right? And that's the last thing it taught me. My place. My place in Alcoholics Anonymous. What am I supposed to be? I used to think you guys are here for me. I remember going to a meeting, and a meeting that I used to go to, and the tables were a square, right? So there was an empty spot in the middle, and I used to think, oh, this is great, man. It makes me feel like there's a place where I can come and dump my problems. Alcoholics Anonymous is not a dumping place. I'll tell you, as a long-timer in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I'm sitting in a meeting and I hear somebody raise their hand and go, I just want to check in, I want to look at them and go, I don't care. That's not why we're here. My purpose in Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12th step says it. I believe that the only reason I'm still breathing in and breathing out is for the 12th step. Everything else is just gravy. Having had, past tense, had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. The first 11 steps will produce a spiritual awakening. That's what it says. We tried to carry this message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. That is our only reason for existing. That's the end. That's what we do. How we do it is up. There are estimated in Alcoholics Anonymous over 2 million people. How you carry that message is up to you, right? What you do, where you do your service. But I'm telling you, Alcoholics Anonymous is a service-oriented group. And it's not that we're here to serve you. You are here to serve the next guy. Now, I hate to break it to you, but the greatest thing, newcomers especially, the greatest thing that will ever happen in your life, if you are sober today, has already happened. We're not here to get, we've already gotten. We're here to help the next person understand, the next person learn. In that process of learning the steps with my sponsor and his sponsor, Mike. Mike was a little Italian guy. He was about 5 foot nothing, smoked like a chimney. And I worked for Mike in one of Mike's buildings when I was 1 year sober. I'd met him and my friend Don that was at that meeting also, Don L. And the guy was... tell you what, when I was like 1 year sober and I thought, and I'm 19 years old and I think life is over, right? And I run into these two guys, and Don, he referred to himself whenever he spoke, he called himself a twanger, right? A twanger is a guy that's sitting at a bar and he's got that little piece of metal and he twangs it to make everybody look to where it's coming from. Just a jokester, right? He just loved to have fun. And I went to work for these guys, and they were cutting up and having fun. And they were both, at that time, they were like 10, 15 years sober. And they were having a good time. And they were an example that that's possible. And so Mike became an example to me when I was going to this meeting. And I went, and Mike, he instilled upon me a love of the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is how Lee and I met, really. Lee, in 2003, Lee came to speak at a meeting that I was secretary of down in Oxnard, and he showed up with his red big book. And Lee and I got together that day, and we've been friends ever since. And we've shared a lot of historical discussions. And Mike told me, all those years ago, he said, Danny, for you, you must understand what was happening at the time so you can absorb the thought behind the steps, the reason, the why. So I started studying, and still studying today, the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it is an amazing, amazing story. I used to have a friend, Norm, who used to talk about seconds and inches. And the idea that these two men were able to get together through the help of about six other people that managed to get them together at the exact right time, in the exact right circumstance, to be able to start this, right? And, you know, Bill tells the story in the big book, right? Here he is. He's...
he's 6 months sober. He's in Akron, Ohio to do this business deal, and it goes sour, right? And he doesn't have enough money to pay for another night in the hotel, and he doesn't know what he's going to do. And he's pacing the floor, and he's looking down the hallway. It's all in the big book. You guys can read this. It's looking down the hallway, looking at the, and he says, he calls it the gay chatter from the bar, right? And he's thinking, you know, I don't want to be alone this weekend. I don't want to be lonely. So maybe I'll go down there and I'll make a friend, right? And he's thinking, I'll have a sarsaparilla first, and he's thinking all that. And then he thinks, maybe I could have one or two, right? Now, in today's Alcoholics Anonymous, we would say at that moment, Bill had a moment of clarity, and it was a moment, just a moment. That's what our lives depend upon, a moment and one thought. And that thought was not, I need to find somebody to help me. It was not, I need somebody to help me get through this. It was, this is written in the big book, what about my family and all the men who might die if I drink? Each and every one of us are uniquely qualified to help at least one single person. And if we drink, that person has no chance. Each and every one of us has a message to carry to the next group. And if we drink, we might be the only people that, the only page of the big book that anybody's ever going to see. Right? So that moment right there, and not thinking, who's going to help me, but what about those men that might die? So he turns and he looks, and there's a directory on the wall. And he's somewhere he's never been. Looks, there's a name that makes sense to him. You know, why he pulled that name out, we can't answer that question. We can look what he said. It reminded him of a thought from his past, from his childhood, all this stuff. But he pulled this name out, Reverend Tunks. And he called Reverend Tunks. And he told Reverend Tunks this. He said, I'm a booze hound from New York, and I'm having trouble, and I was wondering if you might have somebody I could help. That's the difference in 1935 and 2025. People don't think automatically, when I'm having trouble, who can I help? We're always looking for who can help me. And that's not Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is, who can I help? Reverend Tunks gave him a list of names. 9, 10. Some people tell you 10, some people tell you 9. All I know is he called every one of them and nobody could help him until he got to the last one, which he had said he wasn't going to call. He called her. He wasn't going to call her because she's part of the business deal. Maybe you guys all heard this before, but he called her. Her name was Henrietta. He said the same thing. I'm a booze hound from New York and I'm having trouble. I was wondering if you might have somebody I could help. And she responded, Mana from heaven, you are the answer to our prayers. Because she was a member of the Oxford group and they had had a prayer meeting that day for somebody to help Dr. Bob. It is just amazing how we are sitting here today. So, I'm almost done here. Newcomers, people struggling, people in their first 5 years. The next time you think you're having a bad day and you might want to drink, and you're thinking, I've done my best and that's all I got, I say to hell with your best. Your best isn't good enough. I don't care about your best. I challenge you to do Bill Wilson's best. Bill Wilson's best was that day. Nine blind phone calls to people he didn't know, not looking for somebody to help him, but looking for somebody to help. That's Bill Wilson's best. And I guarantee, I personally will guarantee that if you do that, you'll get through that, right? do that. And just a couple of other things. If you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you're sitting around the meetings, and you're like me, and you're not doing the steps, and you're sitting around and you're talking to people that are co-signing that crap, right? They're telling you, wait until you feel better. Wait until you feel better. Don't do that, because it's going to bring up a lot of emotions. Wait until you feel better before you start doing that. I say, kick them in the shins as hard as you can and run. They don't understand. They don't understand. The only thing that ever made me feel better was a drink or the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I cannot feel better without one of those. One for moments, the other for a lifetime. If you ever hear somebody say, do a step a month, don't rush the process. Don't rush the process. I challenge you to read Bill's story in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I challenge you to do that. December 11th, 1934, Bill Wilson checked into the hospital for the fourth and final time. His mommy paid the bill, right? He checked into the hospital. He checked out on December 18th, 1934, 7 days. And in that 7 days, if you read his story and you look at it, he did what we consider the steps. And walked out the door, having a relationship with a creator, having done an inventory, having a list of people he needed to make amends with, and a new attitude that he needed to help every alcoholic. And that's what he walked out the doors with. Don't wait. The only thing that's ever made a newcomer feel better is a drink. For a moment, or the steps for a lifetime. Thanks.